This is The Best of Our Knowledge, a presentation of National Productions.
Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts have been a part of children's lives for a long time, and they're probably not going away anytime soon. But you know what they say is true, times have changed. Now there's a new kind of scouting that helps enrich a child's digital life.
The reality is that for kids, even young children, there is a portion of their social being that's being formed digitally.
Today on The Best of Our Knowledge, we'll hear about DIY.org and how it's taken the concept of scouting into the new century. Then we'll head to Oregon, where teachers using the Common Core standards are starting with one important skill, language. And we'll spend an academic minute with the language of distance. I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Best of Our Knowledge. There's a new co-ed version of Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts for the digital age, one where kids get to make up their own rules. It's called DIY.org. Their motto is, get skills, be awesome. And they have badges. Actually, they call them patches. Julie Sabatier, host of the public radio show Destination DIY, has the story.
Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts are do-it-yourselfers by nature. The organizations were founded on ideals like self-sufficiency and wilderness survival. These are timeless values, but some families find the 100-year-old scouting institutions to be a little out of touch. They require uniforms, their websites are clunky, and they have a lot of rules. But there's a new kid-driven, co-ed version of scouting for the digital age. It's called DIY.org. Their motto is, get skills, be awesome. And they have badges. They call them patches, but they look a lot like those things my mom sewed onto my Girl Scout sash when I was a kid.
One of my patches, what I'm proud of, is Duct Tape Ninja, making things out of duct tape.
This is Lucy Bowman.
I'm 10, and I like crafting.
Lucy has lots of patches.
Fort Builder, Shelter Builder, Prankster.
To earn a patch, a kid has to complete three challenges. Then they upload a picture or video of whatever they made. The DIY.org staff reviews it and doles out the patches.
Cardboarder, printmaker, paper crafter, and toy maker.
Lucy was excited to show me a drawing she did to earn her illustrator patch.
My owl fish bear that I drew, it's a combination, a head of an owl, body of a fish, and legs of a bear. So I wanted to draw an owl, a fish, and a bear, so I just combined them.
The patches are digital, but they also come as tangible, embroidered objects. Lucy has 10 of her patches sewn onto the bag she takes to school. The site is completely free for parents and kids to use. There are no ads, but there is a market on DIY.org that sells some do-it-yourself kits, backpacks, and the physical patches. They're $5 each. The virtual patches are free. They get displayed on the user's portfolio pages. Like many of the kids on the site, Lucy doesn't use her real name. Instead of a profile picture, she has an avatar.
My avatar, since it's sort of anonymous, I am a raccoon named Skitter Evil.
DIY.org is pretty new. It first went live in the spring of 2012, and they have about 200,000 users. That's according to this guy.
Hi, my name is Zach Klein, and I'm the CEO of DIY.
There's two acronyms I never expected to hear so close to each other in the same sentence. Zach is one of three guys who started DIY.org in San Francisco. He's 31, and he just so happens to be an Eagle Scout himself. One of his other claims to fame is co-founding and designing the video sharing website Vimeo. He doesn't have kids, but in creating DIY.org, he drew inspiration from his own childhood experience.
For example, when I was 11, I was really into making web pages. My parents had just signed up for AOL.
Welcome. You've got mail.
And AOL offered this really cool free tool where you can make a web page easily. And I was living in my own internal world, just making web pages. And there was no one in my life who understood the value of what I was doing. And there's no way they could have anticipated that what I was doing then would someday become a really important skill.
Zach says that's why a lot of the ideas for the skills on DIY.org come from kids who use the site.
We're not really good predictors of what skills will be valuable when these kids are adults.
Magician.
Hardware hacker.
Game designer.
Special effects wizard.
And so we have to treat the things that they're passionate about with the same level of importance and prestige as skills that have been traditionally valuable.
Gardener.
Chemist. Woodworker.
One thing all the kids on the site are learning is how to be social online. Kids can follow each other's portfolios and comment on each other's projects.
This is the first time for a lot of kids that they've had a virtual identity of any kind. The first time that they could act without the consequence of being seen. And so, yeah, just for the sake of our community being successful, we have to teach kids to be good digital citizens so that their contributions to the community are productive.
Many of the kids on DIY are not using their real names. That could make it easier for them to be mean to each other, but so far, Zach says they've had a no-tolerance policy for that, and it hasn't really been an issue. The anonymity factor is important for a lot of parents.
There are many families on DIY who go to length to obscure their kids' faces. They'll wear masks even, or maybe they'll do some post-production on the photos and they'll blur out the faces, and we're totally comfortable with that.
The reality is that for kids, even young children, there is a portion of their social being that's being formed digitally. And whether or not you think that's a good thing, that is reality.
Amy Webb writes a column about data for Slate.com. She heads up a digital strategy agency called Web Media Group, and she describes herself as a digital media futurist.
The notion of liking or offering up a comment, those are things that are social acts that are sort of part and parcel of everything that happens digitally. The real problem comes in when parents are not aware that those functionalities exist. I would say in general, the times when you start to find that there are problems with kids and social media are the times when the parents have become totally disengaged.
There are tools built into DIY.org to help parents monitor the way their kids are using the site, and kids can't sign up without parental approval. Even though the site is free, parents have to enter credit card information to verify their identity. It's a step up from checking a box that says, "I give parental permission," but of course it's not completely airtight. Like traditional scouting, parental involvement is a key component. The thing that I find really fascinating about DIY.org and something that separates it from Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts is the way it exists in both the digital and the physical world. Some of the skills are purely digital.
Web designer.
Meme hacker.
Front-end developer.
But a lot of them require kids to step away from the screen and make something with their hands.
Painter.
Botanist.
Chef.
Stitcher.
Home builder.
Bike mechanic.
Then they create a digital record of their creative project, and it lives online where they can share it with their virtual friends. And in some cases, kids are also sharing what they're working on in person.
So guys, if you want to put the chairs on either side and on the back, and then...
On a Saturday morning in Portland, Oregon, 7-year-old Mason Jones and his friend Cam Laraway helped Mason's dad set up for the monthly meeting of the PDX DIY Club.
So it looks like we have a ton of awesome projects.
This is Ben Jones, Mason's dad.
In the back there, we have little bits, robot stuff. And then we've got Perla beads, right, Mace?
He gets some help from other parents and teachers he knows, but Ben is the main organizer behind PDX DIY.
Our first event was at a bike shop. We've gone to a nature reserve to do the botany skill, and then we've been at a reuse center here in Portland called Scrap, and that's kind of been our home.
There are about a dozen kids working in pairs or with their parents on projects they brought or just whatever seems interesting to them. Mason and Cam are digging through a bag of plastic craft supplies.
A little one of these?
Yeah.
We don't know what we're making yet.
On the other end of the big table, 12-year-old Xander Bowman is working on a techie project.
And you can make different circuit boards on here. And I'm just trying to figure out what else could it do.
Right next to Xander is Tova Underwood.
And I'm 11. I am working on this jean jacket, and I'm currently sewing on one of my patches from DIY.
And what is that one?
This is for Illustrator, and then I have another for Maker.
Are you earning a patch while you're sewing on that patch?
Yes. Yes, I am. There's a challenge for Maker and for Stitcher to sew on your patches, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to get both of them by the end of the day.
Tova's mom sits at the table with her, knitting a hat. 7-year-old Amelia Johnson brought along both of her parents. She sits on her mom's lap, working with some brightly colored duct tape.
Here, let's fold this over so it doesn't stick to anything.
Okay, now fold it over on the back.
Oh, this is a wallet, actually, Mom. Oh, we just made a wallet. Yeah, cool.
Amelia has an account on DIY.org.
See super ladybug.
But her dad says she's not really focused on earning patches.
Oftentimes when I show her a project on DIY.org, she will look at that and say, oh, I know how to do that, but I want to do this instead. So it's been a source of ideas for us to talk about. The local meetups are what work for us, more so than the website. So it's meeting up with other kids and doing things.
Clubs were not part of the original plan for DIY.org, but since they started popping up, the site has fully embraced the idea. There are 75 clubs listed on DIY.org, and a dozen of those are outside the U.S. Co-founder Zach Klein says there are more out there that are just not registered yet.
It's one thing to build something and get people to visit your website, but it's another thing to actually cause people to meet in the real world and to cause people to spend their Saturdays together doing something creative. It's a profound feeling, and I think it's probably started with families who maybe had dabbled with scouting, you know, Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts, but wanted to change. And they saw DIY, and they saw that we had patches, and they saw that maybe the skills that we were promoting were more contemporary than those organizations.
Maker.
Rocketeer.
Geneticist.
And they just started meeting and working together.
That's actually exactly how Ben Jones and his son discovered DIY. Unlike the more established scouting organizations, DIY.org encourages users to make up their own rules.
Human beings have a superpower, and it's called play. And I guess our theory is just that we want to give kids the tools and the power and the responsibility to go further with their play and to make them feel special and important for doing it.
DIY.org put that theory into practice in a new way recently when they released a handbook to offer some guidance to the clubs. It pushes them toward the next level of DIY. It says the clubs should be led by kids.
When I read that, it was like, holy cow, what do I do?
Ben says they're struggling to figure out how to adapt the PDX DIY club to get kids more involved in the planning and logistics. For him, it comes down to this key question.
How do we help kids the same way kind of DIY is helping all of the clubs, in that we're not telling them exactly how it should be done, but we're there to support them throughout the process.
They'll continue to meet monthly as they figure that out, and they invited me back for the next meeting. They'll be working on something that was never a part of my scouting experience, the journalism patch.
Journalist.
And we're going to be interviewing Julie Sabatier. The tables will be turned. Instead of her asking you questions, you're going to be asking her questions.
I'm secretly hoping that they'll give me my own journalism patch. It has a microphone on it and everything. It is so cool. Thanks for tuning in to Destination DIY. I'm Julie Sabatier.
Journalist.
Still to come, when teaching to Common Core standards, some teachers are making sure they start with language. That story's next on The Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about The Best of Our Knowledge? Send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past programs again, you can find them online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. You can start your own archive with a CD copy of the program. Call toll-free 800-323-9262. Be sure to ask for The Best of Our Knowledge, number 1229. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Students in Oregon will soon face tougher than ever standardized tests on their way to a lofty goal that every student will complete high school starting with the class of 2025. The new tests ask students to think critically and write out explanations. Those skills require a foundation for young students, beginning with language. Rob Manning looks at the connections between language and long-term academic success for all students.
We're going to talk about language in a minute, but first you have to meet Jackie Kahn. He has a whiteboard set up in his grandmother's living room. He's doing serious multiplication while his sisters chatter behind him. He's in first grade.
36 times 12.
What's the answer?
It's 432.
If you can't do that quite as quickly, Jackie got it right. Jackie has been learning math from his dad, Jung Chow Kong. He speaks through a Cantonese interpreter.
Yeah, this is Jackie's double-digit multiplication. This is pretty basic stuff for students in China, but of course not the same for, you know, American students.
Instruction is changing in Oregon. Backers of the National Common Core standards say they're meant to help Americans compete internationally. The standards aim to go deeper, with a focus on analysis, context, and applying skills like multiplication. Shannon McCaw trains teachers on the Common Core standards. At a recent conference, she quizzed elementary teachers with sample questions about budgets and restaurant menus.
You read, write, and do math not separately, but oftentimes together. And it's very rare that in life you'll ever be handed a worksheet and say, crank out all these math problems. It's solve this math problem in an applied setting where you have to read and gather information and write about, you know, create some kind of proposal or, you know, something like that.
A recent paper out of Stanford University makes the case that in the Common Core, quote, language permeates all the standards in many ways, even in those cases where the word language is not explicitly mentioned. Language has long been a focus for teaching students who don't use English at home. But language specialist Maria Poppy says there's also an issue for the 75% of students at Earl Boyles Elementary who live in poverty. She reads,
by age 3, middle-class children had working vocabularies roughly twice the size of poor children's. By age 3.
So there's a language gap that happens by age 3.
Right. So those students come in already behind in kindergarten. That's pretty sad. It breaks my heart to even think that.
Language and reading are connected, and with third grade reading a critical milestone, schools often intervene with struggling readers. First grader Dude Rabideau goes to reading club with specialist Katrina Shavita. She uses rapid-fire drills on letter sounds and short words. They keep Dude on his toes.
Top to bottom, bottom to top, Dude. Get ready.
In.
Get ready.
Walk.
Get ready.
It.
Get ready.
It.
Get ready.
Walk.
Get ready.
In.
Awesome job. Way to work it, Dude.
Way to work it, Dude.
Awesome job.
The reading interventions help struggling readers learn words. Taking those words and putting them together in complete sentences is a school-wide priority at Earl Boyles for Principal Erica Ganay. She says with the recent changes in language instruction, students are using more academic language. How does Ganay measure that? By talking to students.
I say, oh, good morning, you know, good morning, so-and-so, how are you today? I get a complete sentence back. I don't get a grunt.
Anais Herrera-Martinez is a first grader at Earl Boyles. Her family speaks English and lives close to school. She recently showed me around her yard, pointing out a broken bicycle and a beehive.
These things people, and they're hurt really bad, and they make poison, but they get honey from flowers. And we have flowers in our garden.
Anais is in the language class for students in greatest need. On this day, she and her classmates get cards with pictures on them, and they have to describe what's happening. Anais is looking at popcorn.
He will pour the little seeds in the popcorn machine.
Then?
Then the popcorn pops. Then last, she and her dad eat together.
The cards help students use complete sentences, but that first, then, last construction is also an early lesson in how to organize thoughts. Some aspects of the new Common Core curriculum and language approach have some teachers and parents nervous. Anais's mom, Josette Herrera, is among them.
What they're learning now is like, they're teaching them way too much and too soon.
Too much too soon? Her daughter's language teacher, Karen McDonald, acknowledges that it's sometimes a struggle for young students. For instance, explaining answers isn't automatic.
At first, they were saying it was just in my brain. I just got the answer in my brain. But now they're starting to explain how they got the answer and what picture helped them get the answer.
Mom, Josette Herrera, says she didn't complain about the demands of first grade because she thinks kids are capable of a lot.
I mean, I understand kids are sponges, they pick up a lot of stuff, but I think they could have waited.
Karen McDonald says there's no need to wait.
I think they are capable of it. I really do.
Back at Jackie Kong's whiteboard, the 7-year-old's a little unsure how to explain how he solved his multiplication problem. He'd rather run upstairs to play. Jung Chow Kong says putting math into context, as the Common Core will require, is a little beyond his son right now. But he says not for Jackie's older sister.
He hasn't got to that point yet, but Lisa has, obviously. Well, for example, when they go grocery shopping, you know, dad will ask, hey, you know, how much we're buying, how much money I'm giving, and then what's the change? She knows how to do that. He hasn't been taught that yet.
Jackie's sister Lisa is 10, so she'll be taking the Common Core tests when they start a year from now. Jackie Kong and the rest of the class of 2025 will take them a year later when they're third graders. Rob Manning, OPB News.
Rob Manning's class of 2025 reports are part of American Graduate Let's Make It Happen, a public broadcasting initiative to address the dropout crisis, supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Speaking of language, did you ever stop to think about all of the ways we use words for distance in our everyday language? We did, and that's the topic of today's Academic Minute.
Welcome to the Academic Minute. I'm Lynn Pascarella, president of Mount Holyoke College. Many things that feel effortless are actually the result of complex neurological processes. Talia Wheatley, assistant professor of psychological and brain sciences at Dartmouth College, discusses how brain structures allow us to apply spatial thinking to something as abstract as the future.
Have you ever wondered why we refer to good friends as close, or why we might say that a birthday is just around the corner? We don't mean these things literally. Our close friend might be an ocean away, and we can't walk to a birthday. So why do we say them? Why do we use distance metaphors to talk about abstract concepts like friendship and time? One theory is that neural hardware that originally evolved to map out the visible physical world got repurposed to map the invisible, concepts in our heads like friendship and time. That is, maybe the brain repurposes evolutionarily older machinery to do new things. It's not a new theory, but we recently used brain imaging technology to see whether its key predictions hold up. My students, Carolyn Parkinson, Sherry Liu, and I, scanned people's brains as they viewed close and faraway objects, read phrases referring to the immediate or remote future, and saw photos of their friends and acquaintances. We found that close objects, the immediate future, and dear friends activated one brain pattern, which was distinct from that activated by far objects, later time, and acquaintances. That's strong support for the repurposing hypothesis, that concepts like friendship and time are built on older abilities common to all animals, in this case, distance perception. So when you hear someone talk about a close friend or something happening in the near future, now you know why. These metaphors aren't just poetic. They echo the very machinery doing the work. The recycling of ancient brain hardware is a feat of neural engineering. It's a feat that both sets us apart from and connects us to the rest of the animal kingdom.
That was Talia Wheatley of Dartmouth College. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors at academicminute.org.
Production support for the Academic Minute comes from Newman's Own Foundation in partnership with Mount Holyoke College. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Shartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at wamc.org.